I'm Becky Quick of CNBC and your host of The Forum. I'll be guiding you through exclusive conversations among some of the world's global leaders, conversations previously held behind club doors, but today we invite you in. The Economic Club of New York serves as the premier forum for nonpartisan discussion, dedicated to connecting the world's brightest minds with preeminent public and private sector leaders. A nonprofit, 501c3, the club is a 115-year-old platform for the conversations that help shape the future of our world. The Economic Club of New York, brightest minds, critical conversations, catalyst for innovation. Today's episode is on diversity, equity, and inclusion. We'll hear insight from multiple prominent leaders on their experiences with racial inequity and what it's going to take for corporations to make meaningful changes that trickle down from the boardroom to the executive suite and to our future generation of leaders. Although we've come a long way, there's still much work that needs to be done. Let's begin by hearing LL Cool J, musician and founder and CEO of Rock the Bells, as he shares his perspective on progress and hopes for moving forward.
Look, America is imperfect. There's no question about that. And there's been a lot of problems, but there has also been progress, right? So it's kind of like, in no way is it excusable at all. All I'm saying is there was slavery and there's not. We weren't able to sit in restaurants, and then we were. There was never a black president, and then there was. What I'm saying is there's a woman of color who's vice president elect, and there never was before. What I'm saying is America does make progress. You know, but you have to recognize when unjust things happen, and injustice does exist, and there are too many black men in jail, all right, for nothing.
Echoing the sentiment of many of the world leaders that have taken to the Economic Club stage speaking on this topic, LL Cool J reminds us that progress has been made, but we can't stop here when it comes to recognizing injustice. If we do, the pendulum of progress will swing back. Emmy Award-winning historian Henry Louis Gates also reflects on the nature of progress as nonlinear in speaking about his critically acclaimed documentary series, Reconstruction: America After the Civil War.
12 years of black freedom, followed by an alt-right rollback. 8 years of a black president, followed by an alt-right rollback. Reconstruction, today's era post-Obama is a mirror of Reconstruction. So that's why I decided to make the Reconstruction story. It was in the middle of Barack Obama's first term, and I happened to be at Fair State University in Michigan, which has the world's only Jim Crow collection, the Jim Crow Center. And they collect all that racist memorabilia that, you know, has been part of Western culture for centuries and centuries. In the middle of Barack Obama's first term, they had a whole section of racist representations of Michelle and Barack Obama. And I was horrified. And I realized that while many intellectuals, black and white, were declaring, celebrating so-called the end of race and the end of racism, because they had these new kind of black people in the White House, that the slumbering beast of white supremacy had begun to rear its ugly head. Zora Neale Hurston, in her great novel, Their Eyes Are Watching God, has this phrase, when the flood comes, it's in the Florida Everglades. And she says, the monstropolis beast has left its bed. And that's what happened with white supremacy. And we're seeing it play out today, inadvertently, through no fault of his own. The election of our first black president really tapped a nerve in a lot of people. These issues were simmering, seething, underground, under the surface, you know, barely concealed. And they rose up with a horrible, terrible vengeance, as we saw on January 6th. So Reconstruction, to summarize, W.E.B. Du Bois wrote the first honest account of Reconstruction, 1935, called Black Reconstruction. And he has this marvelous quote. And he says, the slave went free, stood a brief moment in the sun, and then moved back again towards slavery.
There are new factors at play today that could change the pattern. LL Cool J points to the power of social media in changing the narrative.
I think that people are starting to get that. I think that, you know, the internet and the social media has connected a lot of like-minded people, and a lot of small tribes have become big tribes, and a lot of like-minded people who used to be scattered all over the place have now become this more cohesive voice, and people have to respect and respond to those numbers in the masses. Which is a reason why I think net neutrality, a lot of these things are important, right? Because we need to make sure that people can stay connected. We don't want to divide and conquer. You don't see the people divided and conquered.
We have seen that social media has the power to transform the nature of progress. It reminds us of a famous quote from Thomas Jefferson. If you want something you've never had, you must be willing to do something you have never done. Social media adds the power of new connections, but there's much more that has yet to be done. Progress can be made more quickly with the help of the business community taking new levels of action.
Now, what I will say to the business community and to the economic community is I think that they have more of an opportunity to do more than they think they do. And I don't think that they should take as much counsel of their fears when they have those, you know, that 10% or that 5%. Calling them up with that racial tone, trying to get them not to do this and not to do that. I think that they have to be strong enough to kind of weather some of those storms and do business with people anyway, in spite of those voices, you know, and because that's the only way to transform America. You know, we're going to have to drown out those flames of racial injustice, you know what I'm saying, with the wisdom or the water, with the rain of just us working together and being one. You know what I mean?
So how can the business community take action? Henry Louis Gates outlined two tangible steps to make change.
Two ways. One in terms of vetting educational programs. The other in terms of understanding what a comprehensive fix would be.
To him, the best ways for businesses to act as agents of progress are, one, invest in education and after-school programs that create more equity in our educational foundations. And two, invest in research and think tanks to find effective and feasible solutions to inequity. The club recently heard from David C. Banks, the chancellor of the New York City Department of Education, who echoes the importance of education and the significance of tapping into young Black talent to shape our future economy and workforce.
And I would suggest to you that this is no longer about the business community doing a nice thing. I firmly believe that in this global economy, we can no longer afford this much wasted human capital sitting on the sidelines. If we don't get more of these Black and brown kids in particular into the game, we do it at our own peril. The challenges for competitive economics are there every single day. And we've got all of these young people with all of this talent that we have not tapped into. I think they are the secret weapon for the 21st century economy, but our business leaders have to recognize that as well, and recognize that these can be their future workforce if they help to work with us to hone it. It can become a win-win for everybody. That's what I'm hoping.
Optimistically, we have seen companies begin to take this perspective on human potential. Darren Walker, president of the Ford Foundation, shares his thoughts on this.
The number of companies that are now recruiting from HBCUs that are paying attention to not only recruitment, but retention. And as you say, mobilization up the corporate ladder. That's very important.
As new generations continue to enter the workforce, the need to reevaluate past hiring practices and provide opportunities for more racial equality is becoming non-negotiable. Michael Pugh, president and CEO of Carver Bancorp, believes that Gen Z is going to carry this mission with them throughout their careers.
One interesting statistic that I read and found is that 76% of Gen Zs somewhat agree or strongly agree that large firms must take a stance and get involved in helping towards racial equality. And so if you think about part of the paradigm shift that's happening today, we have a generation of people that are out there with a voice and demanding change. We have board of directors that are saying as part of their key metrics for success of organizations, they want to add diversity and inclusion. They want to think about you know, what racial equality should look like within their firms.
Ultimately, it's crucial to have diverse representation at the top in both the executive level of organizations and as members of the board. Would you like to be a part of the conversations at the Economic Club of New York? Learn more about membership, the New York City and National Fellows programs, and other opportunities for engagement in the club at www.econclubny.org. Next, Kenneth Chenault, former CEO of American Express and just the third African-American CEO of any Fortune 500 company, calls for this topic to be viewed as a business challenge that needs constant work and innovation.
I think there are a number of CEOs who have seen the impact of having a more diverse workforce and the benefits to their business and company overall. But what is absolutely critical is they have to face this issue as they would any challenging business issue. How are they going to innovate? What are the tactics that they need to put in place? How are they going to measure? How are they going to hold people accountable? It's got to be integrated into the entire fabric of the company. You're the one who controls what's put into the pipeline. And so the reality is that, again, if you simply take the position that the status quo approach and processes are the ones that you're going to follow, then you're not going to make progress. And my experience has been that if you understand how to go after the source of talent and you vary your approaches, that you can make substantial progress on the pipeline issue.
Charles Tribbett, the former co-lead of Russell Reynolds Associates Board and CEO of Advisory Partners, breaks down some statistics on corporate board membership.
Usually the board may have one slot. It's going to be filled with either one of those backgrounds, a woman or a person of color. Most of the time, it is a white male. White males still are the most dominant members growing in a board of balls. For the last 10 years, 10 years ago, 75% were white males going on boards. Today, it's roughly in the early 60s, so it's gone down. But at the same time, for just take Black men. Black men 10 years ago, it was about 5.7%. Now, fast forward to today, it's only roughly 5.6%. So we've gone down slightly. Now, at the same time, Black women have gone up. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, it was maybe 1.9%. Today, my statistics show that it's roughly 3.1%. So the increase have been mainly Black women. Hispanic or Latinx, 10 years ago, was about 1.9%. I will tell you that for the CEO to really be supportive of having diversity on the board, but not have any diversity within the top 100 ranks of the company is wrong. It's an embarrassment. So if you're going to push for diversity on the board, clearly you need to open up and create diversity within your senior management team.
Darren Walker agrees the change has been slow, but he says it is taking place and it needs to be an intentional process. For example, tying it to a business's annual goals.
So let's just start at the top where change really does matter. At the board level, last summer, literally a third of the S&P did not have an African-American on its board. The NASDAQ companies, when NASDAQ proposed some diversity measures for NASDAQ-listed companies, most of the NASDAQ-listed companies did not meet last summer those proposed changes. Fast forward to today, we have seen On most of those boards, diversity began to emerge in really material ways. So at the top, we are seeing changes. Let's go to the C-suite and the operating committees. Again, we are seeing progress, not as fast as I would like, but if you look a year later, in many of those corporate C-suites that did not have a person of color or African-American especially, we're starting to see those numbers change. We're starting to see the funnel at the front end begin to change. I don't see a need for a quota. I do see a need for a commitment with intentionality. And that intent has to be manifest on an annual basis in which you are indeed counting. And I mean, this is one of the things that corporations do best, and that is to set goals, to have measurable deliverables associated with those goals, and to tie compensation of management with those goals. And so that to me is an emerging best practice. And I'm seeing it certainly, again, the public boards that I serve on, diversity is a component of the CEO's compensation.
Aside from calling for change, there are many who are actively working towards it themselves. For the past 15 years, an annual Black Corporate Directors Conference is held, bringing together the nation's top Black leaders. The conference was designed to develop best practices for African-American directors to promote progress within their respective boardrooms. Let's hear from John Rogers and Charles Tribbett on the significance of this conference.
We started the conference with Charles Tribbett from Russell Reynolds 20 years ago. And we had 30 directors at the Gleacher Center in downtown Chicago, University of Chicago Business School. And you're right, the last year before COVID, we had 200 directors. And we've been really blessed. We've evolved it to being just not African-American directors, but more and more Latinx directors also. It's been great that both the Asian community and the Latinx community have created conferences patterned after our conference. And so we feel like we're really impacting and touching a lot of people. And we've been sort of really blessed that over the years we've had a diverse group of leaders come and speak at our conference. You know, it's the Ursula Burns and the Ken Chenaults have been there, the Don Thompson from McDonald's, but also the Jamie Dimons and Ken and Jeff Immelt's of the world. Shonda Rhimes has been there, extraordinary. We've had Magic Johnson there. We even had President Obama there.
The conference's call to action remains consistent, guided by three core pillars. Charles Tribbett shares insight on each.
We have established a perspective of what we call three Ps: people, purchasing, and philanthropy. So when you're a director, we ask that you think about people, particularly people of color, Latinx, Asian, African American, as well as women. The only way to get diversity on the board is to make sure you have diversity in the C-suite. And there's some companies that you have to go beyond the C-suite because the C-suite may be small. It may only be 10 people. And so you have to go a little bit lower in order to create that diversity. So as a director, you have to ask the question, what's the succession planning that's in store for those that are in the C-suite? Is the CEO beginning to move individuals that are not just white males, but are also training and developing and mentoring those that could become potential candidates for us to go on boards? Mm-hmm. Is the CEO also allowing members of his or her C-suite or below that C-suite to go on boards? Because if not, then it cripples, it stymies the ability to have diversity on board. The second is purchasing. I'm sorry, you were going to ask.
No, go ahead. Yeah, I love your three P's.
Well, I was going to say the second is purchasing. And it's the view of what we're purchasing, vendors, you're purchasing. When a company is contracting out consultants, when a company is about to do a $20 billion acquisition, it's not appropriate to have an all-white male investment banking group that they've hired. If you're having diversity on the board and you're requiring diversity in the C-suite and below, surely you should be having diversity for your consultants. It goes beyond consultants, landscaping, construction, all of the areas that a board, a company is in charge of contracting out should have diversity. And the final is philanthropy. Every company is involved in philanthropy. But is the philanthropy given to only white organizations, or is it given to underserved companies that care for and those that are in need of health care, those that are in need of legal attention? There are all of these not-for-profit companies all around the country. So I think that on the board, these three P's need to be questions that are asked to the company to hold the company accountable, not just for the development and training of people, but also for its philanthropy contributions and its for its purchasing contributions.
On the second P of purchasing, companies' willingness to form contractual relationships with minorities, John Rogers shares his insights.
I'm finding on this issue of the purchasing part that I've talked about a couple times already tonight, people are more open, and especially again since the George Floyd tragedy, I said earlier, our civic committee is really completely behind it. We had a big event in Chicago last week where the National Supplier Development Council had a big celebration in Chicago. It had entrepreneurs from all over the country there, and our civic committee co-hosted a reception. We had several hundred people at the Chicago Club. And our civic committee gets behind the key things. It's people you guys would know here. It's Lester Crown, it's Jim Crown from the Crown family. You have the Pritzker family involved. You have, you know, the heads of the biggest companies from ITW to JP Morgan Chase, what have you, that are there involved with the civic committee. And they've all agreed that this is going to be the next big initiative, is to try to create opportunities to build strong minority businesses in Chicago. And when they get there, you know, when they get committed to something, they can really make a difference. So I'm really optimistic, you know, in my hometown.
Businesses have the power to create a new level of change. We've seen a shift in thinking that has transformed diversity and inclusion efforts from elective to imperative. We close with a reminder from LL Cool J on why that progress is so imperative.
So I think for America, it is better that all races of people, ethnicities, religions, genders, that everyone succeeds, because any race or any people in America that don't succeed, if any race or ethnicity doesn't succeed, that's a leak in America's boat as a whole. You can think you know you're not gonna be, it's, you know, you're not over there on your part of the boat watching TV and, you know, watching football with your remote control, and you think you're good, and there's a leaky hole in the boat at the stern. All right. Because guess what? The whole boat ultimately goes down. So that's why I think this is an important time for us. But I think it's important that we speak from a place of connection as opposed to demonization.
You've been listening to The Forum by the Economic Club of New York, a nonprofit 501c3 dedicated to connecting the world's brightest minds for critical nonpartisan conversations. Be sure to subscribe now to be alerted to future new episodes. Would you like to be a part of our conversations at the Economic Club of New York? Learn more about membership, the NYC and National Fellows programs, and other opportunities for engagement in the club at www.econclubny.org. I'm your host, Becky Quick. Thanks for listening.